Hello, you're listening to the Tickler Podcast on packetof3.com.
You make the rain disappear. You make the sunlight appear. Whenever you are here, everything's clear.
I'm joined today by Christopher Holland. Welcome, Christopher.
Oh, thank you very much, David. It's a pleasure to see you and talk to you.
So, thanks for inviting me along. I'm really interested to know about your new album. So, Corner Green, where did the title come from?
Well, the title actually came from the place it was recorded in initially, which was a little studio I've got set up at home, which is pretty much an 8-track setup. Which is pretty basic, but most of the songs were kind of started off there and then carried on down at Helicon, which is a studio where lots of the Rhythm and Blues Orchestra, the big bands, do their recordings, but it's kind of better there to mix stuff. So, that's pretty much why it was called Corner Green originally, and so it stuck somehow.
So it went from 8-track to 8,000 track?
Pretty much, yeah, over kind of a number of years almost. It's sort of built up over the... over sort of 2 or 3 years, I think, since initially writing the songs, you know. So I'm quite pleased with the way of doing it like that, because you can kind of get to sort of work out the songs a bit first, and then just keep on working on them over the sort of period, you know, which is good.
Well, I hesitate to call it a new album, because when I downloaded it on iTunes, it was 26 tracks, and so you've got the delight of, you know, lots of demo versions as well as all the new songs. But what made you choose to do such a fanfare and bring out so much new stuff?
Well, I think, like you said, now the sort of concept of an album is almost sadly almost dying out. I don't know if there is almost such a thing in some ways. Like you said, because of iTunes now, I thought really might as well get as many songs on there as you can, because I had lots of songs that were kind of sort of finished and been written, and I just thought, well, it's nice to just get them out somehow. And then I can sort of move on to the next thing. So I just thought I might as well get them all down, and then rather than just trying to decide which ones to put on it, I've sort of got the initial 12 or 13 songs is the album, and then there's another 12, 13 songs that kind of ended up as the extra bonus tracks. But they are really only on that sort of limited edition CD and available through iTunes, obviously. But once that's gone, that run of CDs, that will be obviously a collector's item in years to come. So
get it quick.
Yeah, exactly. Answer, that's what we're saying. Snap it up while it's...
Get your hands on the collector's item while you...
Well, if it's still there even. But I think by the time, you know, we've finished this, they may have all gone even. So I don't know. But yeah, that was kind of the idea, really. I think it was about 3 years ago, suddenly all these sort of ideas came out, so I wanted to just get them down while they were fresh, really. So I thought, go for the sort of Songs in the Key of Life kind of concept. It's a double album almost, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was nice.
Well, I'm really interested in where people's inspiration comes from, because if I was a songwriter, I'd want to write one really good song and then stop because I'd written one. Whereas, you know, what is it that keeps you writing and keeps you motivated and, you know, makes you dedicate so much time and, you know, attention to detail and care over what it is that you...
Yeah, it's a good question, isn't it? I don't really know. It just seems to be the more you do it, the more you kind of discover and sort of more, almost the more enjoyment you get from doing it. And hopefully over the years, you know, you perfect your craft as much as you can. And it should hopefully, like anything, really, the more you do it, get better, you know. But and you're always sort of finding out new things or ways of doing it. But it's always a pleasure, you know, or whatever sort of mood I'm in. I tend to go to the piano, you know, if I'm sort of really sort of happy about something or sort of really depressed or sad about something, I seem to kind of let all the sort of emotions come out through going to the keyboard or whatever instrument it is and kind of letting it out in through that, really. So that's probably sort of the real reason that they kind of start off and then evolve into these sort of songs, you know. And it's nice to see how they evolve. You never know how they're going to end up, you know. You have a kind of picture in your head, hopefully, of the sort of idea, and then it's always a nice thing to see how they end up, you know. Never quite the same as you imagine, but
so what song off the new album's different from how you originally envisaged it? You know, what started off as one thing and ended up as...
Well, actually, one of the ones which was interesting was the one that Chris Difford wrote the lyrics for, which was called Grapes of Love. Mm. And that was, I mean, that was a long time ago. Those lyrics were around, and they've just been sitting around for some time, because I hadn't really written with another lyricist before. I had this sort of melody or riff on the piano that I'd kept playing, and then they were literally just sitting by the side of the keyboard one day, and they just seemed to all fit perfectly. But it did take a bit of a while to kind of make it all work somehow and to fit all the words in. So that was a bit of a challenge, but that was a really interesting sort of way of doing it. Yeah. So that was one that ended up sounding completely different than I'd sort of originally written it, but I'm quite pleased with the results.
And it's sounding great.
I think it was all right. Chris would quite like that one as well, you know. And it was a different way of doing it this time, because I've sort of, like you said, worked out the sort of demos, and rather than going with the band and do it all live, which I would probably usually do and will be doing next time, but I kind of built them up from scratch almost and worked that way, which was good. So hopefully going to be doing a few more with Chris in the future and see how that goes, because it's
So when you're writing songs just on your own, do you find the melodies what comes first, or do you start with lyrics, or is it the two just magically combined?
It always seems to be different, you know. But it's like the one that was written about Difford and Chilbrook on there. That was just a little kind of demo song, really. But that was,
so tell me about that.
Because that was just noodling about on the piano with certain chords that came about, and it was probably after listening to a bit of Gilbert O'Sullivan and a few people like that from the '70s that. You kind of start playing with these kind of major sevenths and chords. And so I had this sort of chord sequence, and then I didn't have any words for it originally. But so I had the melody, and then I recorded the sort of melody bit. And then I don't know, I think it was when I went to see Chris Braid, who you might be familiar with. Written quite a bit of Glenn and stuff in the past. But I was talking to him about different songs, and then we were talking about, you know, obviously Glenn and Chris's sort of songwriting and the influence that's had, obviously. And then I was sort of thinking about it. I thought it'd be nice to actually write a song about that almost. And obviously one of Glenn's sayings is, cheers then, love. Mm-hmm. So it just on the way back from Chris Braid, it kind of all came sort of in my head, really, this thing, cheers then, and then Glenn obviously rhymed with that. So it was all a bit silly, but it was just kind of a nice way of doing it, you know, so... That's kind of how that came about, really.
Yeah, that sounds great.
I was young, just begun. I can still remember the first songs you sung. Words I'd hear read so clear. Hold up my beer and say cheers then. Your songs were like friends since I was 10. Now when I hear them again, I say thank you Chris and Glenn.
I mean, it's quite often they come instantly, you know, these ideas. And I've got a little tape player at home. It's almost it's just a simple analog tape cassette player.
Yeah.
And I always have that by the piano, so I press record if I've got some ideas. And then quite often they're sort of, you know, they stick in your mind and you sort of remember them. And and then you come back to them and join all the, it's like joining the dots a bit sometimes, you know. And then quite often, because I'm touring with Jules's band quite a bit, obviously, you get quite a lot of time to travel around. So I'm sort of listening to stuff when I'm driving along and kind of getting ideas for words and stuff. And also now I've got my sort of groovy new phone, I can record ideas on that. So if you're just walking along and you suddenly get an idea, you can just start recording the ideas anywhere you are, which is great, you know. But yeah, usually it comes about in sort of stages, you know, and you have the ideas and then you kind of work on it over a bit of time, and it kind of varies, you know. Sometimes you can do it in literally a few hours, you kind of get the basic idea of the song, but sometimes it can take kind of months, you know.
So tell me about your first experience of music, actually hearing yourself play. When was that?
I mean, it was probably after, in the sort of mid-70s, I suppose. We had quite a nice piano at the house, which is where Squeeze used to come and rehearse. And they'd be playing, you know, in the sort of living room almost. And I remember sort of being really inspired by that, all that sort of music at the time. And then just going in and sort of playing, messing around on the piano, really, and the sort of whatever keyboards were set up.
But I've tried messing around on the piano, and it doesn't quite sound like you do. So there must be an intervening stage. I'm missing somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think originally it didn't sound that musical. You know, it took a while, but I think I started with something like Nights in White Satin or something. I had some idea just on the piano, like just a really simple kind of sort of scale that went down. And then I think luckily, obviously, you know, Big Brother used to sort of show me a few kind of little licks on the piano, which was good, because then you'd sort of practice some sort of rock and roll piano stuff, which was good. But I kind of then kind of got more into the actual sort of craft, the actual songwriting, which was from probably listening to the early Squeeze stuff, which was really inspiring, and whatever was around at that time, you know. So I think it's just practice, you know. I used to just did practice a lot and just go in and just play all the time, really, and from that you just get better. It's like anything, really, you know.
Head out your head. One more secret. Do you promise not to tell? Can you keep it? Oh, you've got me in your spell. Fancy coming driving to a house above the moon that was made for love.
So as a youngster, did you want to sound like someone else or emulate someone else? Or?
I suppose it's a mixture of lots of things you're inspired by growing up, you know, which obviously was whatever, you know, your sort of... I think like Squeeze were obviously a big influence, as I said, just because they were around at the time. But then I was listening to lots of Beatles, even Judy Garland, people like that, and all sorts of albums, around that time, which were like some musicals and things. So some of the classic songwriters, you know, like Rodgers and Hart and people like that. I used to love all those songs. Everything that was around. I mean, all the 70s music, which was in the charts at the time, things like, what was probably things like sort of Chicago or bands from the 70s, you know, and all the sort of glam rock stuff, you know, T-Rex and all that stuff, which was a bit earlier on. But that was obviously sort of an influence somewhere. It all kind of went in, you know. You kind of just sort of, I don't know, you mash all this stuff together and then it all comes out in your playing, I suppose, somehow. Yeah. But I suppose that's always been the case, isn't it? From the sort of, you know, from the Beatles listening to the sort of early blues and Chuck Berry and stuff, and then you just get all these influences and mixtures of styles that you make your own, really.
Yeah, yeah. So I know that you've played with more musicians than we could possibly list in a week. But is there someone that you've always wanted to play with? Is there some singer or is there some musician who you think I would have just loved to have been there with them? Or
well, I do still love that period from the 60s and 70s somehow. It just felt really sort of magical time musically because it just seemed quite, you know, inventive and everything. Mm. So probably I'd sort of go back to that time, you know, and then have probably been in... must have been in a band like Little Feet or sort of, but I don't know, sort of, looking back now, you know, there's, it's been really amazing to have had the opportunity to work and record with lots of these sort of artists now that, growing up, people like Paul Weller, you know, and listening to The Jam growing up, you know, you wouldn't have thought that you'd be sort of playing and touring with him, but, it's great to do all that, and you sort of learn from each of these sort of things you do, but... I think still one of the main people that I'm sort of inspired by is Stevie Wonder, probably because of his because of his keyboard playing. And he's such a genius and just somewhere that's on another level, you know, musically.
Yeah.
And that really kind of affected me, I think, you know. And so I think out of anyone, probably him. But it would be a shame almost to I don't know. It'd almost be nicer just to keep it as it is somehow.
Yes.
I don't know. It might sort of spoil them something if you actually did sort of end up, you know, playing or writing or doing something with him, because it's almost nice to keep it separate somehow.
Yeah, no.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I can recognise that. So tell me about your involvement in The Squeeze then. Like, obviously you had them rehearsing in your front room.
Yeah.
As a youngster. Did you ever imagine that you'd be on stage playing with them?
Oh, not really, because
there's
a little bit of an aged gap, you know, because obviously Jules was about 9 years older, so they all seemed a lot older, you know, which was at the time when they were sort of rehearsing and playing locally. It was, you know, I was probably about 12 or 13, but it obviously did have a big effect, you know, seeing that and thinking, well, that looks good thing to do, you know, and you kind of see them evolving, you know, and then it probably
looks better than accountancy as well.
It looked a little bit. I remember my dad was, you know, he always used to get quite stressed out because he was working up in London, you know, and he used to get a bit stressed with his job sometimes, and he'd get back and you'd just think, the idea of going off to America and touring, you know, with this band and just making lovely, great music seemed a bit more appealing, I suppose, you know.
Yeah.
So, but it was like a natural thing, you know, you just start playing music and then just, you know, you form your own little band with whoever's around. It was quite hard to find people around at that time who want to play, you know, 14, 15, but
yeah,
we managed to find a couple of singers and songwriters, someone called Lisa that I've worked with, sort of, you know, again recently, Lisa Covington.
Yeah.
She used to be in a band that I was in when we were about 15, and she used to play guitar and sing, and we used to write songs and record every day. We'd kind of I'd have a little four track set up, and we'd sort of meet after school and we'd just come back and start writing songs and recording. And then a few years later on, we did manage to we ended up supporting them. We got signed to Miles Copeland's label. And then we ended up getting a couple of singles out on IRS Records and then going on to supporting Squeeze. So that was a great experience. And then a few years later, I'm just trying to sort of fast forward a bit. There was a sort of incident where I can't remember exactly what happened, but I think because I had a sort of bit of a motorbike accident as well for a while. I was in hospital. I was in a coma, almost didn't come through the other side. But that was quite traumatic, obviously. I came out and then suddenly there was the chance to, I can't remember how it came about, but there was a chance to play some keyboards for some Squeeze kind of concerts. And I think at the time there'd been an incident where Jules had had a play fight with Glenn.
The famous finger incident.
Yeah, and I was only about 16 or 17, so I don't remember much, but I remember I was called out to help out a bit, play a bit of sort of organ and second keyboards, because I think it was a bit tricky.
Julian only had the one hand.
Yeah, that one hand, and and it was the Cosy Fan Tutti sort of period. There were lots of keyboards on it.
Yeah.
So I think I was just around, and it just seemed like a good of opportunity to just get another keyboard player and just doing the sort of like little pads and the strings and stuff. So
obviously on the Cosy album that released 12... different keyboard parts overdubbed, because that's what you did.
Yeah, in the 80s.
That's what you did then.
And I mean, I still, like, lots of people think, you know, I don't know if it's one of them, you know, most loved records, but I still think it's got a particular sound about it from the 80s, which is really great. But for keyboard player, I mean, I was playing kind of piano and organ sort of really then, you know, but for keyboard player, it was quite tricky to play lots of those sort of parts, because it was all sort of... well, if you listen to the record, you can kind of imagine, really, but it was all kind of string sort of parts or little keyboard arrangements.
More than a fistful of chords.
Yeah, a little bit, you know. So it was quite a challenge, I suppose, at that age to try and do that. But it was fun. So that lasted a while. And then I just carried on doing a little bit more session stuff, I think, from that, really, you know. So it was... and so that kind of carried on to playing with various people. And then a bit later on, yeah, obviously sort of played with them... again, so it was nice to have the opportunity to do all that, and yeah, it was a pleasure, you know. It was great fun. So
yeah, now, so someone who's never met you before, who just knows you through your music, would get a really strong sense of your personality, because, you know, cosmic harmony is something that comes across in everything that you do and the way that you play. Everything that you sing, so where do you get your worldview from?
Well, I mean, it was interesting, but after I did have this, I hadn't really thought about it till recently, and I was just trying to remember. But after I did have this sort of this incident where I was in a coma, and I remember coming out the other end and just thinking, I just thought everything. I was just, it was so nice to be alive almost. And I just thought, wow, this is great, and just sort of make the most of each day, you know, enjoy it all. And so from then on, I sort of started. I don't know, just writing more songs, I suppose, and coming up with ideas that were kind of more meaningful, possibly, you know, about just general things, you know. And I was, the first time I started recording some of these songs, I was in a studio, and there was a big newspaper with the heading Cosmic Harmony something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it sort of stuck for some reason, because it was. Because I needed a sort of idea for an album title, and at that time it just felt like a kind of the right kind of sort of vibe, I suppose. So,
yeah.
Kind of went with that, and then sort of seemed to have stuck with it a little bit over the years. So, yeah, that was the reason that came about.
Yeah, no, it's great to know where it came from. So, people should download Corner Green, because it's a great sounding record. There's lots and lots to listen to. There's lots of varieties, some great demos, some incredibly funky tunes.
There's a bit of a mixture, isn't there? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. So if you just had one song to choose for people to listen to tell them what it's all about and where you're coming from, which one would you say? So, give me 3 minutes of your life. Here's... something that I've created for you. Which one would it be?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, the first sort of song's quite nice. That everything's clear, because it's quite a simple song, you know. And I think it's quite nice to try and write as simple as possible in some ways. You know, not get too carried away with like clever chords and jazzy things, and just try and be really simple. You know, and that is fairly simple, but then it does go a bit it does go a bit kind of chordy in the chorus bit. I mean, that's quite a nice example, I suppose, you know, and that's quite acoustic sounding.
You make the rain disappear, you make the sunlight appear, whenever you are here, everything's clear.
So tell me, why the album's in two parts? What are they?
I mean, it's pretty much the fact that partly I'm a big fan of analog sound generally, which I think you are.
Yes.
As far as analog goes.
Oh, the warmth of vinyl.
and I've got a lot of, over the years, kind of collected a lot of analog keyboards and synthesizers, including Squeeze's first keyboard, which was sort of handed down to me. But I've used a lot of those keyboards on this album. And the last batch of songs, which is the last kind of 12 songs, I pretty much did all on my own, you know, at Corner Green, using lots of vintage keyboards like the clavinet and the sort of Moogs and stuff like that. So it was almost just an experiment, just going into myself a bit, you know, with the keyboards and just doing it all on my own. So all those songs sound slightly less produced than the first lot, which is done with Ron Box, that's the engineer, and a few other sort of musicians. So it's almost like, yeah, two sort of separate halves, really. The well-produced stuff and then the sort of demo makeshift songs that I've been doing at home.
Yes, yeah, so it's an album of two halves.
It is, in a way, yeah. So it's two albums, almost.
So tell me about the legend that is Ron Box.
Well, I can't say too much about him because, it's a bit of a, you know, he's a bit of a man of mystery.
And, just tell me about his ears.
Well, his ears are golden, basically. He's got two magical ears, and he's got...
Has he got one on either side of his head?
As far as I remember, yeah, he's got... He might have a third one as well, but I'm not sure where that is. He's got a third eye, though, definitely. He's got a sort of intuition and magical sort of sense that he can hear things that probably no one else can. And he's quite a perfectionist as well, which is sometimes good because it sounds good, hopefully, but sometimes it does make things take a bit longer than they would if... you were sort of not worrying about the rough edges so much.
He's
amazing. He's a brilliant guitarist. He plays bass, he plays everything, all sorts of instruments, and he's just an amazing technical wizard, which is something I'm not particularly so good at. So between us, we managed to do the best we can in the studio, really. He's like the engineer and the sort of half producer. On most of the stuff I've done.
And he is a very lovely man.
He's probably one of the most lovely, gentle people, like yourself, David, that I can think of. He's a really nice sort of, you know, he's probably 20 years older than me. He's kind of had a lot of experience, so he's kind of got, he's got all that as well. But he's just such a sort of calm and sort of just an all-round good egg, you know, nice and a good person. So it's a real pleasure to have him to work with, really.
So what interests me about the process of recording is that you're trying to capture lightning in a bottle somehow. You're not with an audience. There isn't that magic moment of connection with other people and that shared understanding of what you've just created. It's a very different environment in the studio. Did you have one of those moments, you know, a magic moment of, you know, feeling at one with the universe where you just captured that take and you don't know what it was, but...
That does happen. I mean, when I go in with Ash Sohn, you know, and also Dave Swift, the bass player, plays with Jules sometimes, and we've gone in and just played some stuff, just jamming around, and it does feel great sometimes, you know, and you just want to capture that initial thing, you know, before you start recording almost, just what you're sort of naturally playing.
Yeah.
Which we have done a little bit on that, but a lot of these songs, there was almost a magic with me and Ron because you just have the idea of the song almost on your head and you in your head and you can play it on the piano, but it's not actually recorded as yet, so it's like an invisible thing, you know. But me and Ron used to sit around and play the songs together, and then we just record us playing pretty much on a lot of these ones, and then we'd sort of play that live and then build it up from there. But there was definitely a magic when it was new and he'd never heard the songs. He'd sort of, you know, was learning them, and we'd sort of play them together and put it down, and it just felt, yeah, it just had a kind of bit of a spark, which was great.
Yeah. And what do you think about the reaction to the album so far? Because people I've talked to seem to be
It's been really good. I mean, Danny Baker's really been picking up on it recently, and he's been sort of playing it a lot, and he said something like it was Inner Visions, Something Anything, Todd Rundgren, and Some Fantastic Place, then you'll love this, which is really a massive compliment, because all those things are, you know, particularly Todd Rundgren, who I went to see recently, I've been listening to a lot recently, and it's just like, you know, that someone say that that's kind of a kind of compliment. It's such a nice, you know, compliment.
Because he's very quotable, isn't he?
Yeah.
You couldn't pay someone to say what he thinks about your music.
So. I do really respect his views, you know, because he's a real genius on as far as music goes, you know, and he's a real expert on all sorts of music, and he doesn't say things unless he believes it, you know, which is nice. So, yeah, I think he's a big fan of it, so that's really nice, you know, and lots of people have been having the similar comments, you know. I think the thing is now lots of music does, I mean, I don't really listen to a lot of modern music, you know, like my son sort of listens to the charts, you know, whatever they are, and it just seems to kind of go over me. So I can't quite kind of get it. But there's lots of great bands and artists doing proper songs, you know, in acoustic ways and with bands, and there's definitely you know, that kind of thing is what I'm trying to capture, obviously, which is seems to be hopefully what this is all about, you know.
So tell me, what's next for you? Where can we see you?
Well, apart from once we've finished this, I'm kind of going to have to go on tour with the Rhythm and Blues Orchestra for kind of a couple of months, just to sort of help to pay for the cost of it, obviously. and then, but then, yeah, I was going to start doing some gigs next year to play some of these songs. And really, the next plan was to do some recording with some of the guests on here. Actually, there was Siobhan Parr, Katie Schotter, and a few people like that, and there's a few local people that are really great. You know, I'd like to kind of work with a bit more, and we could record some stuff as a separate kind of project. And then really going in next album, I'm just going to go ahead and do it really pretty much live, you know, possibly with Ash or whoever we can do it with, get in the studio and just do a really simple raw sort of sounding album of 10 songs or something, really. And yeah, that was the next plan.
Yeah,
just got to get this this little tour out of the way first, which would be fun, and then start thinking about next year. Yeah.
Well, I look forward to seeing you on the tour.
That'd be lovely to see you, David. Yeah, well, it's always a pleasure seeing you. And and I'd just like to compliment you on everything everything you've done for the Packet of Three website and everything, and how marvellous it is that you're still here doing it all.
Thank you very much. It's some labour of love, obviously.
Well, same, you know. But yeah, you know, it's I think a lot of people appreciate it and love it. So big thanks for that.
It's a pleasure. On that note, Christopher Holland, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David. See you soon.
You've been listening to the Tickler podcast on packetof3.com. Bye.